From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I'm announcing that I will direct all states, tribes, and territories to make all adults, people 18 and over, eligible to be vaccinated no later than May 1. We're going to go from 1 million shots a day that I promised in December to maintaining, beating our current pace of 2 million shots a day. I will not relent until we beat this virus.
We're being cautious, but I'm also cautiously optimistic. It's one of the reasons why we've begun to open up even more, go to a ball game together, and then bring back conventions and outdoor activities for the summer, including, you know, maybe some medium-sized gatherings.
Governor J.B. Pritzker and President Joe Biden both say things are looking up when it comes to the coronavirus, the vaccine supply expected to increase. There's also talk of getting back to some sense of normalcy when it comes to gatherings and opening the economy. And here in Illinois, there's a lot of money coming from the federal government as part of a new stimulus package. We'll break it all down here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, emeritus professor and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime State House reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois State House editor. And joining us today, we have Brendan Moore. He's a state government reporter for Lee Enterprises. And Brendan, it's good to have you on with us.
Glad to be on, Sean.
Hannah, let me go to you first. The pandemic, a year later, maybe some light at the end of the tunnel. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, I would say so. And I don't think I would have said that a couple months ago, but you know, for lots of reasons and some that public health experts and doctors don't understand, our cases are continuing to plummet, our hospitalizations too, you know, despite the fact that we have these more contagious variants present in, you know, the United States and Illinois in particular. And we, you know, the very low numbers that we've seen are, they're not accurate of what is actually out there because we have very low screening of these variants. Anyway, it's pretty wild. I mean, March 11th of this week was the 1 year anniversary of the World Health Organization declaring coronavirus a global pandemic. And, you know, I remember sitting in that news conference that Wednesday, March 11th, 2020, and asking the governor about where we were at with our testing supplies. And he said, you know, we have thousands, but we need tens and hundreds of thousands. And that freaked me out so much that I decided to cancel everything else and work from home from then on. And just a year later, being on the cusp of, you know, seeing all of these people getting their vaccines, obviously we still have miles to go, but you know, we hit 10% of Illinois' population being fully vaccinated this week. So that's pretty remarkable. And it, you know, dare I say, I'm pretty hopeful for the future.
And it sounds as though Governor Pritzker is as well. Is that fair to say, Brendan, from you, you've talked with him about this?
Yeah, absolutely. As you just heard in the clip, and I spoke with the governor yesterday about this topic, and he relayed the same message that he's cautiously optimistic about where things are going, given the milestones that Hannah just mentioned with vaccines. And we could be getting even closer to making the vaccine more available to even more people. The state is expected to hit more than 100,000 shipments of vaccine per day in the coming weeks. At least that's what Governor Pritzker is saying that the federal government is relaying to the state. And we could be entering a new phase. We're currently in phase 1B plus, which basically opens it up to people with pre-existing conditions over the age of 16. We could move to phase 1C in a few weeks, which could open up to even more essential workers. And then obviously, as President Biden has indicated, he wants to open up the all states open up eligibility to every adult by May 1st. The Last week, the Chicago Public Health Director, Allison Arwady, had put out a statement saying that, you know, we could reach, by the end of March, phase 1C. And I asked the governor about that yesterday, and he basically said that Dr. Arwady's guess is not a bad guess, and that a lot of the discussion has been sometime around that date or maybe a few weeks after. But obviously, with what President Biden said last night, there that could be even sped up even more. So the governor sounded, again, very optimistic, which, you know, he's been very cautious, as we all know, this past year. So it was a very, very interesting, I guess, tone. And I guess we'll have to see how we do in the coming weeks and how vaccine rollout continues and if our numbers continue to remain low.
And that's a good point. Charlie, we still have a ways to go. Even if the vaccine is available, you have to get it into people's arms. You know, we're talking about this idea of the herd immunity, of reaching a certain percentage of the population that's vaccinated. And I know that people with the warmer weather, people are tired of being stuck in and the different mandates that have been put in place and the economy closed. It's not quite time to let the foot off the gas, is it?
Oh, no, not at all. The fact that the president has set a goal to have enough vaccine to vaccinate every American in the coming months doesn't necessarily mean that the existence of the vaccine at the manufacturing plant is going to be into the arms of the people who need it that quickly, because we still have a problem on making it available to people who want it. When a new site is opened up here in Illinois, the available appointments get snapped up literally in a matter of moments. And there are people, particularly senior citizens or people who live in areas where they don't have the kind of access to the internet, have a hard time lining up a vaccine. And you hear reports of people who are on the line or have one of their younger children or a friend be online trying to set them up for vaccine for hours on end. So we still have the problem of getting the vaccine from the manufacturers and getting it into people's arms. Now, one would hope that with the efforts being made, particularly the governor opening up more mobile vaccination sites with staffing done by Illinois National Guardsmen, and also with trying to expand the people who are able to give vaccines to take in more people who have some expertise, for example, dentists or veterinarians, that will help. But it's, in my mind, there's still a long way to go. And the most dangerous thing would be for people to assume, oh, everything's okay, so I don't have to wear a mask anymore. I don't have to do social distancing. I can just go back to the way things were 2 years ago. And we would wind up with a third surge, I would fear. And that would set us back many months in the battle to overcome this virus.
Hannah, that there almost is a bit of a mixed message, because we are telling people, you know, again, stay the course right now. But we're talking about opening up at least some attendance at baseball games. There was discussion this week also about certain conventions like the Chicago Auto Show.
Behavioral economics tells us that people respond to pressure from, their peer group. And so I think back in the fall, if you recall, when we were facing this second surge, the governor got a lot of criticism for, he didn't put the regions of the state in mitigations, the regions, positivity rates they triggered, getting these mitigations put upon them. And we saw resistance, of course, but also after a pretty brutal fall and into, the holidays, we saw cases drop precipitously after the holidays because, once January hits, there's really truly nothing to do. And I think that, people saw it fit to just stay home. And, that in combination with vaccine availability increasing over the last couple months, and also just the fact that the a lot of the population has been exposed to COVID, whether they actually, you know, had infections or, you know, they didn't, that still contributes to herd immunity. But yeah, you have a point that it would be perilous for leaders to talk out of both sides of their mouth, saying, you know, you still have to stay home, still have to wear masks, and yet, you know, opening things up. So I think it would be wise for the Pritzker administration to develop, you know, a more streamlined public communications campaign, you know, and obviously the governor and others have criticized moves by people like Texas Governor Greg Abbott, who I think it was last week, he decided that the entire state of Texas, pandemic's over, we're just gonna open everything up. I think, you know, a lot of Illinoisans look at that and say that's foolish, but there are definitely a lot of Illinoisans who look at Texas and they say, hey, we should be doing that too. So it is confusing, but it's up to the governor and, you know, other local leaders to keep enforcing things until we're sure that we are safe, that we are at herd immunity, and we don't know how long that might take.
What would you say, like, indicators is going to be coming up in the next several days with the St. Patrick's holiday? St. Pat's Day is a big party day, and so we'll see what happens. We'll see. I know the city of Chicago has said they're really going to crack down on holiday gatherings that don't follow the rules. So I would say maybe a week or two from now, if our numbers continue to look good, that'll be a very positive sign. But the worry might be that people, as you said, people are feeling good. They're cooped up. They want to get out. St. Patrick's Day is a wonderful day to party. And they go out and do it. And as a result, we get a third wave beginning here in Illinois. I think you have to be able to look at it. I don't know so much a mixed message as it is, here's where we are today. And if we keep doing these things, here's where we could be a month from now. But we have to keep doing the things. It's kind of like the kid waiting for Christmas. You know Christmas is going to come, but you can't be asking Santa to give you your presents at Thanksgiving Day.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, along with Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Brendan Moore, a state government reporter for Lee Enterprises. And Brendan, I guess Christmas has come for the state of Illinois, many other states as well. This huge federal stimulus package that's now been signed into law, Illinois will receive quite a bit of money. What do we know about this package, what it's going to mean for the state?
In the immediate short term, it's a significant help to the state budget and the budgets of local governments that have been pretty devastated by the pandemic. And obviously we know all the problems Illinois has had over the years with its budget. But there is about $7.5 billion that will be directed directly to the state of Illinois for whatever purposes, pandemic-related purposes in the budget, about $5.5 billion for local governments. And obviously there will also be money in there for schools and for vaccinations and a lot of other key areas in responding to the pandemic. So in the short term, it solves a lot of the budget problems for this year. It will plug, I believe the budget deficit was pegged at about $3 billion. It'll help the state pay off some of the, I believe, $2 billion that it borrowed last year from the federal government to get through the last fiscal year. However, I think as Senate President Don Harmon told one of our colleagues earlier this week, these are going to be, one-time funds, perhaps for one-time solutions to problems that were brought on by the pandemic, and that, you know, they're also have to address some of the state's structural deficit problems. But in the immediate term, it is really helpful for the state. And then obviously it goes without mentioning the fact that the majority of Illinois adults are going to be receiving $1,400 stimulus checks, and perhaps more if they have dependents and or they qualify under various other provisions.
Charlie, we've been hearing the governor basically lobby for this money for months now, and now that it's finally coming through, how big of a deal is it for the Pritzker administration? They would be facing a lot bigger obstacles here if this money was not being made available, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, very definitely. For one thing, as Brendan said, we've borrowed a lot of money. We've borrowed a bunch from the federal government. We borrowed some from other state funds. We basically have more than $4 billion that we borrowed to help us get the state through this pandemic. And more than a billion of it has to be repaid by June 30th. And so I'm guessing that's where a big chunk of the money will go. We also had a bill backlog that of Friday morning was roughly $5.4 billion in general fund spending, about 63,000 vouchers. And the comptroller has pointed out we need to use this money from the feds to help pay down the backlog. Now, in normal times, the backlog would be a couple billion dollars simply because a bill gets submitted, it doesn't get paid right away, because it's got to be verified. There's certain procedures that have to go through. So we're always going to be having a bill backlog. It's just like if you have a credit card, you're always going to owe something, assuming you use the credit card to buy stuff, because you don't pay it on the spot. And so I think what will happen is, as we pay down the backlog, it'll generate additional revenue for us, because a lot of the backlog is healthcare. And the Medicaid, under the terms of the Coronavirus Relief Act, the state is getting an extra boost. Instead of getting 50 cents on the dollar, I think we get like 63 cents on the dollar reimbursed from the feds for our Medicaid spending. So that will help us to bring in additional revenue. But the comptroller has been very vocal about telling the lawmakers, look, this is not going to be some kind of a free-for-all. We have all this new money. You can create all these new programs. We have to use it to pay down our debt and to try and stabilize our finances. And as a matter of fact, one of the strings that are attached to this new federal aid are not as restrictive as the previous bills were. But one of the things that is specifically prohibited is states using the money to pay pensions.
And that a lot of Republicans have talked about that, Charlie, that, you know, in Congress, especially saying it would be a bailout for states like Illinois that have not managed their financial situations well. So that was thrown in there as well.
And I look at that as being a load of horse manure. Illinois is a giver state. If you look at the records of whose citizens contribute to the federal government through their taxes and whose citizens get benefits back, Illinois and a handful of other states, particularly large states in the Northeast, pay more than we get back. And it's been that way for years. And some of the people who are doing the most whining, people like Mitch McConnell, are in states that are taker states that get far more money back from the federal government than they actually contribute. So I discount those Republicans who contend that it's a bailout. And ironically, while the Republicans in Congress, none of them could support this, or felt that it was feasible to support it, nonetheless, among local government leaders, Republicans, as well as Democrats, mayors, county board people, were firmly on the side of getting this additional money, because cities and counties here in Illinois, for example, are going to get almost $6 billion as part of this new package.
Well, at the state level, we heard those comments from Susana Mendoza, Don Harmon making some comments as well. But there are still concerns out there, Hannah, that from some individual lawmakers, really on both sides, that the state might try to do something different with this money and not put it to the best use.
If you think about how the dynamics of state government have gone for the past year, basically Governor Pritzker, as executive branch of government, he has worked alone for a lot of the pandemic, and lawmakers including Democrats, although, you know, a lot of the vocal criticism has come from Republicans, you know, feel like they were sidelined. Of course, they did have the capability to, you know, call themselves into session and change laws to allow for remote legislating, but they didn't. And that was, you know, largely because of, you know, Mike Madigan as speaker. He did not actually want to, you know, notwithstanding the, you know, federal investigation that swirled around him last year, but, and still does, frankly, but, you know, lawmakers, they want to be part of the conversation. They want to be a co-equal branch of government again. And so, you know, this week during a Revenue and Finance House Committee hearing, the chair, Representative Mike Zaleski, you know, he said, please, I think he told Alexis Sturm, the governor's budget director, you know, please relay to the governor that we, you know, we lawmakers, we want input on how this money should be appropriated. And so there's definitely that tension there that's existed for months, and I think will probably keep existing until, you know, there's a sense of normalcy and equilibrium again. But, you know, the other thing is, so, you know, Brendan mentioned $5.5 billion will go to city and county governments in Illinois. And last spring, after the CARES Act money was appropriated, you know, the large counties got their share right away. But, you know, downstate, well, not even just downstate, but, you know, smaller cities and towns and counties, they had to go through the state to get their appropriations. And some of those really small places, they decided it wasn't worth, you know, expending resources and time to apply to the state to get money that, you know, they are owed. And so the Illinois Municipal League, which represents these, you know, municipalities all over Illinois, they had this big ongoing fight with the, you know, Pritzker's administration. And I would say they largely lost that fight, but, you know, they're hoping this time that maybe the money would be not filtered through the state, where the state could get it back if these municipalities decided not to apply. So we will see how that plays out.
Yeah, Brendan, are you hearing that as well from lawmakers you deal with?
About the
just tension, but with the governor's office.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I think, and as Hannah said, you know, talking about Mike Zaleski, it is on both sides of the aisle, and I think that that's part of the reason why the House in February approved remote legislating, so they can, you know, have Zoom committee hearings and be involved in the process more so than they were last year. And I think they want to definitely exert themselves more than they have early on in the pandemic. And obviously in any crisis, typically the executive will be out front and take the lead and respond to the immediate crisis. But obviously now we're in a recovery, we're getting to a recovery phase of this. And obviously these funds are part of that and part of the response. And I think it's only natural that that lawmakers want to say in how those funds are spent. Although it will be, there will be, as I think a few of you alluded to, that there will be pressure to spend this money maybe in ways that are not necessarily directly tied to COVID. You know, I'm kind of reminded a little bit of the apples and oranges, but kind of reminded of the parking meter deal up in Chicago in the late 2000s, where Mayor Richard M. Daley basically privatized the Chicago parking meters for over $1 billion for 75-year deal, and basically spent all the money within the first couple of years papering over structural budget deficits. And obviously the state of Illinois, lawmakers have done that over the years, whether it's shorting pensions to pay for current expenses. And so I think there will be some tension there. There'll be some pressure there because obviously a lot of communities have been very hard hit by this pandemic, and there's going to be pressure to fund programs and protect certain programs from the chopping block. And we even saw that after the governor's budget address, some lawmakers concerned, for instance, about the state not allocating the $350 million additional funding under the evidence-based funding formula for education funding at the state. So I think we're going to continue to see that as the session plays out.
All right, time now for our notes from the field. And Charlie, let's start with you.
Well, we've talked about people gambling on whether or not they should keep following the rules of social distancing and mask wearing. And in another more immediate form of gambling, Illinois sports betting hit a record in January, roughly $600 million in wagers. Revenue for the gambling houses, for the sports books, was approaching $50 million, and the state's share of the taxes was approaching $8 million. And Illinois bettors wagered $230 million on basketball, roughly $160 million on football. These records came despite the fact that we can't bet on in-state colleges, which is going to be important because the University of Illinois is very likely to be a number one seed in the upcoming NCAA March Madness.
All right, Brendan.
We all saw last week, Robin Kelly was elected chair of the Democratic Party of Illinois, and it was largely on a platform of opening up the party, decentralizing power that had been concentrated for more than two decades in the hands of former chairman Michael Madigan. Kelly wasted no time doing that. Last Saturday, she was in Springfield speaking at a canvas kickoff for local school board and park board candidates. Senator Durbin was supposed to be there, but he got stuck in the Votorama last week for the COVID relief bill. But his top aide, his state director, Bill Houlihan, was there and made an interesting comment introducing Kelly, basically saying that it was the most meaningful political victory of his career.
Okay. And Hannah?
U.S. Senator Tammy Duckworth announced her reelection bid as expected this week, of course. She, of course, won in 2016, knocking out Mark Kirk for that junior U.S. Senator seat here in Illinois. Tammy Duckworth also this week, she got in a bit of a Twitter spat with Tucker Carlson, the Fox News pundit, after he made sexist comments about women in the military. And of course, Tammy Duckworth lost both of her legs in a helicopter crash in Iraq in 2004. And so she tweeted, you know, this is public radio, but she's tweeted F Tucker Carlson, you know, while he was practicing his two-step, a reference to when he was, I guess, on Dancing with the Stars. Totally missed that. America's female warriors were hunting down Al-Qaeda and proving the strength of America's women. And then J.B. Pritzker, from his political account, retweeted that and said, I'm with her.
Well, that's it for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Hannah Meisel, and Brendan Moore with Lee Enterprises. You can get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org and through the NPR One app. Join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.